Hello, and welcome back to Talking to Grandma. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. Over the past decade, we've seen a shift in schools' perception of multilingual learners. Things like changing our language from English language learner to emergent multilingual student shows how we're moving from a singular focus on English acquisition to a more holistic approach to bilingualism and biliteracy. In this episode, we dig into that conversation with bilingual educator and specialist Josie Sherman. In addition to being an amazing educator, she is also my sister. She talked with us about her journey to reclaim her heritage language, Spanish, and how she is now cultivating learning environments that value and encourage students in their home language. Josie is a pre-K bilingual teacher with Klein ISD. She graduated from Texas A&M University with a degree in wildlife and fishery sciences and went through an alternative certification program to become a certified ECE for bilingual teacher. She has taught bilingual students in Texas for 16 years, teaching first grade and pre-K. Currently, she teaches pre-K bilingual at Klein ISD. She is a wife, a mom of two, an amazing sister, and a Chicana who is always looking for ways to grow in her culture and how to pass that culture on to her children. Welcome to the podcast, Hermana. We're so happy to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sister. I'm so glad to be a part of this.
Well, I know this story, but for our listeners, why don't we start from the beginning? What was your language loss or preservation journey like?
Being from Texas, one would think we would know how to speak Spanish because it's very prevalent. But like you, I did not grow up speaking Spanish. Our parents spoke to us in English first. When we did get to the age where we started to go stay with our grandma for the summer, that's when we kind of started learning to pick up Spanish, and it was a little bit here and there, enough to get by, enough to say, tengo hambre, quiero comer, and the basic Spanish. And then it was Valley Spanish at that, right? Because it was what we heard there in the Valley. And I feel like I picked it up a little bit more than the rest of the siblings. I don't know if it was because I was the oldest at the time when we started visiting grandma. But for some reason, I think I picked it up more than most of us.
I think that's true. I mean, I don't totally remember the summers that you spent there, but I remember one summer mom sent Amanda and I there for a few weeks by ourselves, and they're like, learn Spanish. This is going to be your opportunity to learn Spanish.
Yeah.
And Amanda and I were like, okay, like we learned the basics to talk to grandma, but then we just talked to each other in English the entire time. So I wonder if like being older, you just had more time to develop the language without having us speaking English to you all the time.
Yes. I had friends there like that lived mm-hmm. down the street. So it wasn't just me and, y'all, because I don't really know if I went with you and Amanda, but I was there with Robert and our brother. But I had other friends that lived in the neighborhood, so I would go visit them. So I was getting outside of grandma's house. I know that. Also, at home, it was all English all the time. And I know there was a point that mom and dad decided that they wanted to teach us Spanish. They were like, okay, it's time to learn Spanish. And we just refused. We were like, well, no, it's okay. We don't need to talk to you. It's fine. So, we'll live without talking. It's okay. So that was kind of a fail. But then when it came time for school language, I wanted to learn French for some reason. And dad was like, no, we don't learn French in Texas. We learn Spanish in Texas. So I took Spanish all through, I think starting in junior high, all the way through high school. Took the AP test, got my points, and was like, yeah, good. I don't have to take it in college. I'm good. I'm done. But as far as socially with my friends, even though we were, our school was very black and brown, I didn't really speak Spanish with my friends. We didn't at school It was all English. I think that, you know, even socially, we spoke English. Even though we had a, you know, we did the cultural things where we had quinceañeras and did all the dances and learned all that, language was never a part of that. It wasn't, at least for me. Like, I didn't know how to talk Spanish.
Yeah, but it was kind of always in the background, right? Like, it was something that you were, like, we were surrounded by. I felt like I grew up hearing a lot of Spanish, but it wasn't, like, necessary to build friendships or relationships or, like you said, a lot of our life was just in English with Spanish surrounding it.
Yeah, it was always in the background, mostly with the adults, right? And they would use phrases with us. You know, it was never a conversation. I never heard them doing conversations in Spanish. I think even now, if I look back at it, them within themselves speaking Spanish. I think, like you've said before, mom and dad used it when they didn't want us to know what was going on. But I think that was the most conversational Spanish we heard. Other than that, it was like phrases. They would talk to us in phrases. So those were the phrases we knew. Yeah. You know? But yeah, I don't think it was until maybe after college that I was really interested in speaking Spanish on a daily basis. Even though I had learned it in school, it was academic Spanish, the books, the ones that come out of the book. So it wasn't really social language. So it wasn't until after college that I became more interested in speaking it outside of a classroom.
Super interesting to hear it retold, even though I feel like I was right alongside you living that. I wonder, just looking back on that experience, how does that inform your thinking about how children acquire language and stay connected to their heritage language? Having experienced what you did, like, how do you now think about what it takes to ensure that children stay connected to their heritage language?
I think it's shown me the importance of using it and being consistent with the language. Because, you know, I teach in Spanish and I teach in Spanish all day long. So I constantly am using it. But when we break for summer, you know, here in my home, we don't speak Spanish at all. I'm the only Spanish speaker in our home. So I don't use it for 3 months unless I'm talking to mom or dad. I use a little bit more Spanish now that I'm older with them. So then when I go back to school, at the beginning of the school year, it's rusty. I'm rusty. It takes me a minute to get back into the flow and I can feel myself struggling to find the words. So I think it's just taught me, you know, having consistency and not being afraid to use it in all situations.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's like a pretty huge shift, right? From going from not really using or speaking the language at all to learning it in an academic school setting and then to getting more into it after college. And now you're a bilingual teacher. You use Spanish every single day in your classroom. So what was that journey like to becoming a bilingual teacher? Like, was that always your vision that you had hoped to teach in a bilingual classroom? How did you get there?
I had never thought about teaching in a bilingual classroom. I always wanted to teach. I knew teaching was what I wanted to do. And it came around in a long, long roundabout path. But bilingual was never like, oh, I'm going to teach bilingual. What got me into the bilingual classroom was the stipend that they paid, right? I was like, oh, more money. I'll take that one. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I was certified through alternative certification, which means I didn't do the, you know, I had a degree in wildlife and fishery sciences is my degree. And when I was getting near the end of college, I was like, this is not what I want to do. I'm pretty sure it's teaching I'm going with. So I did alternative certification. And when I was doing that, nobody told me about the extra certification you had to have for being a bilingual teacher. I took the supplement where it talks about the, you know, what they called then was ESL students. Like, how do you teach an ESL student? Like, what's the best way? And that was some paper and pencil. That was fine. I passed that. Nobody told me that I had to take an oral certification where you have to sit there with a tape recorder and record yourself. And that caused so much anxiety because I don't speak in Spanish. Like, I know Spanish and I can order my food and I can go grocery shopping in a, you know, in a Hispanic grocery shop, but I don't speak Spanish. And the first time I took it, I failed it because it was just so much anxiety. And then you're stumbling through verbs and what tense do I use? And oh my goodness, what, you know, is it el or la? What am I doing? So I failed it the first time and then I had to retake it. And the second time I passed and I became a bilingual teacher in Texas. But I never really like saw that as my mission to do.
And then you got into the classroom. So you were attracted to becoming a bilingual teacher because there was an additional stipend for it, which is wonderful. And still the case in many states that there is an additional stipend for it. And there is a huge teacher shortage because there is this growing need for bilingual teachers. And so you found yourself in the space of becoming a bilingual teacher. It was a challenge, right? Because it was a language that wasn't developed when you were a student. You weren't in a bilingual program. So you had to learn it a different way. And now you find yourself certified as a bilingual teacher. What were some of the unexpected challenges in those first years of teaching as a heritage Spanish-speaking bilingual teacher?
I didn't have confidence in my Spanish. And I, at the time we were where I was teaching at, it was a transitional program. So it wasn't dual language. The whole point was to get them to transition to English, right? So speak English to them, speak English to them. So I was really teaching in English. Besides, you know, I did the Spanish language arts in Spanish and it was first grade. So it's like, oh, I can do first grade Spanish. Like I got this. And math was in English. Science was in English. So a great majority of our day was in English. But when I did have to do Spanish or I had to communicate with students that were newcomers and had no English, like there was a confidence issue on my part. Like I was not confident in the way I was speaking Spanish and if I was doing it right. So that's something I really had to overcome.
How did you do that?
I think it was like, once again, just practice and using it and studying. Like I lived with my verb dictionary in my hand. Now it's on my phone and I still use it, but I would like run and get my dictionary and like, okay, how do I say what it, you know, the kids would see me sit there and use it. Okay, let's find this word. How do I writing notes to parents? Like it took me twice as long because I had to sit there and search for the right verb tense and how to write it. So it was just putting the legwork in and getting better and getting fluent and using it. Because, you know, as you use it, you feel more comfortable. I did feel a little, whether it was real or not, I don't know, judgment from other teachers that were Spanish speakers and that I wasn't using it right, or I had an accent, or I wasn't using the right words because, you know, the words we learned were South Texas, you know, South Texas words, what the Spanish that our parents. So we had South Texas Spanish. So it wasn't always the Spanish that students were coming over with. So that was something else that I had to get past.
Yeah. I love the way that you put that of judgment, whether it was real or not, because sometimes it can be really real. Like there can be comments or microaggressions or, you know, not an understanding of the historical context that divested you from your linguistic resources and the struggles to bring it back. And the fact that, like, you know, we don't want folks to make fun of people who speak Spanish as a first language and who speak English with an accent the same way that we don't want folks, you know, who are speaking Spanish, even though it's not their first language, with an accent. But there's also this element, like you said, that it might not be real, right? That it could be in your head, that it's a lot of these internalized thoughts around being fearful of judgment that might keep you from speaking up or from engaging with native Spanish speakers. And I know I've definitely felt that, and I've recognized it, that sometimes it's real and sometimes it's me making up these stories in my head.
Yeah. I think when I moved out of the first school and I became a pre-K teacher for the first time, and, you know, it was either in Texas, the way you qualify is either low income or being a second language learner. So the school was majority, you know, we had our monolingual classroom, but half the school was bilingual. And that was the first time I had been in that setting. So I interacted with a lot more teachers. And I feel like that's when I really felt that, because before that, I had only had my bilingual teacher partner. So we worked together and there was a close relationship. But then I came into an environment where there were teachers that didn't know me, didn't know my story. That's the first time I really felt like, whoa, so they're looking at me, they're listening to my Spanish. And like you said, some of them were microaggressions. They would make little comments. And I was like, so that kind of puts a seed in your head when you're trying to talk and to find those words, and you're always judging yourself, am I saying it right? And that comes across in your teaching when you talk to your students.
Yeah. Did you ever get that feeling from your parents or your students, like parents who were, I think most of your parents you speak to in Spanish, right?
Yes.
Or your students. Did you ever get that sense or feeling from them?
Not really. I have had, you know, kids are forgiving. You know, I've had 4-year-olds correct my Spanish, and they're like, I'm like, okay, thank you for letting me know. 4-year-olds tell you everything. Once I got married and I was, and my last name is an American name. So I would have parents come and check on, like, just wanted to check to make sure you speak Spanish because I saw your name on the list. And I'm like, yes, I do. But for the most part, my parents have been very, forgiving. And I think it's because they just want to communicate also. And they understand that their communication skills may not be, you know, where they need to be. So we're just there trying to communicate for the kid. And as long as we understand that, I've always tried to put that message out, like, I'm here for you. Whatever you need, let me know. So I think they've been always really supportive with that.
How have some of these challenges of being a bilingual teacher shifted over the years as your relationship with the language has changed?
When I started, my mind space wasn't in the language preservation, right? Preserving these, you know, instilling in these children, the students, their culture, to be proud of their language, to be proud of their culture, like to be proud in themselves. Because I did not, you know, my schooling wasn't that way. That's not what we focused on. It was be English, speak English, do this. And when I started teaching, the same thing, the message was get them into English, get them into English. So slowly my viewpoint has changed into, no, like you are stronger for who you are. You are stronger because you are navigating two worlds. So we need to cultivate this. So with changing my perspective on my reason for being in the classroom, it's changed my confidence in speaking with the students in Spanish. And I've learned so many words because in teaching pre-K, because, you know, you can't tell a 4-year-old one thing and they're satisfied. They want to know, well, why? What's this? And what's this? And, well, you know, the panther and this, their cousins, what makes it? So you have to learn all the words to explain to them why and what, you know, we did, we were studying xylophone, right? We were doing our letters and the xylophone. What's a xylophone? So I pulled up a video of xylophone and we were talking about, and then the mallet. I'm like, oh, what's the word for mallet? I don't know the word for mallet. I've never had to use mallet before.
What's the word for mallet? I don't know the word for mallet.
We learned it, but then we forgot it because we watched the video and then the guy was like, palito. I was like, oh, well, that was easy.
Right. Because there's so many different ways to say it. Yeah. There's like, yes, there's a way that you find in the formal dictionary. And then there's a way that, you know, the person down the street says palito and it's their first language. And that's what they say. Yeah.
Yes. So I think my para and I, and she's from Mexico. And so, and that helps me a lot because when I don't have words, she'll help me. We were both like, I don't know, what is mallet? You know, because in English, that's the word I would teach, mallet. And the kids were just, what is it? What is it? And then we watched the video and he's like, panito. And I'm like, okay, that we made it way too hard. So, I mean, when I first started teaching pre-K, because it's now been 10 years, we did nursery rhymes in English. I read, you know, this, I wasn't thoughtful and mindful of the books I was presenting, the music we were playing. Now I, you know, for our transition times, it's traditional Spanish nursery rhyme songs that we play. And then I'm very particular about my books that I read. And I try to pick books and find books that reflect my students and their culture. Like that was never in my forethought. I never did that when I first started teaching. And so with time, I was like, no, I want them to see them as enough and that they are everywhere. We are everywhere. You don't have to change who you are because you are everywhere.
That's so powerful, that shift, and really important in the classroom. Like it makes such a huge difference. What do you think facilitated that shift in mindset and practice for you?
There was a group of teachers when I first moved to pre-K. With them, I did not feel that judging of, you know, even though they were better Spanish speakers than I was, they still welcomed me in. I was still a part of the circle. So I grew in my Spanish speaking. Because we would go out after work and we would hang out and we would speak in Spanish to each other. And that was the first time I had had that. I never really had a group of friends that spoke Spanish. All my friends before then spoke English. So, you know, we hung out, our children hung out, we went to each other's houses. And so, you know, I was speaking Spanish and seeing Spanish outside of just work. It was now part of my life. And so I was, the more it was a part of my life, the more comfortable I got with it. So that, I think that's where my mindset started to shift into, no, we are important people. We deserve to have this space as much as anybody else and to live in our language, to live in our culture, and to live in our space and not try to move over and make ourselves smaller for other people's comfort.
That's beautiful. And I'm wondering if you've seen any similar shifts in thinking about the importance of the language and the culture and the validity and the enoughness of it in your colleagues? Like, do you see a shift in your district or in, you can even talk about like the larger landscape in, you know, Texas around really being thoughtful about preserving the language and culture for bilingual students?
I think it's a slow shift. It's happening, but it's very slow. You know, systems yield the result that they were built for. So the education system in Texas, like in most of the United States, was built to produce English speaking students. And it's hasn't changed. I think there's pockets of change happening. We now have dual language classes, but they're not in all the schools. Only some schools do dual language, at least in our district. I don't really see our program as a bilingual program because it stops at fifth grade. So I've always, you know, it boggles my mind. If we want these students to be really bilingual, why are we stopping it at fifth grade? you know, why are we not learning history in Spanish? Why are we not, you know, so the learning in Spanish really stops at fifth grade, because I'm assuming they think that you'll take your Spanish class, right? Your school Spanish class is very still. I was looking at a book. It's still, you know, like the words that are not as common. And I was like, but you're only teaching one set of words still. It's your vocabulary. It's not inviting all, you know. And I remember taking Spanish class using our words like that we learned. And they're like, mm-hmm. No, that's not how you say it. And I'm like, really? Because that's what my parents said to me. I don't think that bilingual education is true bilingualism. There's still a focus on transitioning students into English. There is a slow shift of wanting students to be proud and using their language repertoire and accepting that, but they're still getting tested in their English fluency in kindergarten. You know, they're still getting tested and wanting them to transition. And if your students aren't transitioning out of bilingual classrooms, what's going on? Why are you not getting them into that? So while the words are being used, I don't feel like the action is there yet. So the ideas are starting to trickle in, but the action pieces haven't made it yet.
Right.
So that's always been, that's been my point of view for a long time now, is that if we were really bilingual, we really wanted them to be bilingual, students would study in Spanish through high school.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you're so spot on in naming the importance of systems. Oftentimes when we think about like heritage language preservation, we can think about like, oh, it needs to happen in the home, like parents, make sure that you do this, make sure that you do that. And that's really important. And a lot of families have been very successful in preserving and passing on their heritage language by creating a home environment that does that. But it's would be so much richer and so much wider if the schools started to change systems to fully embrace bilingualism. And, it, you know, spending time here in Denmark, where, you know, our family is for a big part of the year, it's amazing to see the bilingual systems here, right? That it starts from a young age and is consistent through graduating high school. And it's a fully bilingual country, like fully bilingual Danish, English, and it's possible. And I think hopefully in the U.S., we're starting to, with the growth of bilingual programs, we're starting to see a shift towards that. And maybe in 10 years, it'll be a different conversation. We'll be back on this podcast saying how amazing it is that we have these bilingual pipelines from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade.
Yeah. And I think that's why we struggle to find bilingual teachers, is because we're not, you know, it doesn't get nurtured. It doesn't get, you know, like this is an important part. And I know in English, we had the Teach for America students. It was like the student to teacher program, like for students that mm-hmm. wanted to be teachers. They would get you started and stuff like that. You know, that was a perfect opportunity to get students who spoke Spanish into the teachers programs. That's just missed. And because we don't show people that Spanish is, you know, a strength and you can contribute to your community and help your community in that way. I think now that it's slowly getting there and changing, it's a slow, slow process. But because of all those years back not valuing Spanish, we are now struggling to find bilingual teachers, to find teachers, period, much less a bilingual teacher. It's like, wow, you know, or a bilingual speech pathologist or a bilingual, you know, reading specialist or, you know, math specialist. You know, finding these people that are so important in our educational system that can do English and Spanish is really hard, really hard. Not to mention administration or principals that speak Spanish. That's even, wow. If you can find an admin that can speak Spanish, you're just like, cool, yes.
I love it. I mean, also, I mean, you're pointing out that our pipeline, our teacher pipeline, you know, also starts in schools. If we want more bilingual candidates, then we need to create schools that promote bilingualism and biliteracy. I think a big part of why we also wanted to share your narrative on the show is to highlight, yeah, that there is, you know, there's a national teacher shortage. It's even more intense for bilingual teachers. And there's a lot of folks who learn Spanish at home or learn, you know, Spanish, but aren't so completely confident in the grammar or the writing of it because it wasn't something that was cultivated in an academic setting. What would you say to those folks who might consider becoming a bilingual teacher, but have some hesitations about it?
You can do it. It's possible. Get a good dictionary. It's going to take a minute with commitment and legwork. Like, it's possible. And the more you live in it, the more comfortable you'll become. It will take time. As a bilingual teacher, I have to put in a lot of legwork, especially when it comes to translating. I do have to translate a lot because sometimes my, you know, my brain works in English, right? And then Spanish second. So sometimes it's faster for me to do English first and then go back and translate it. It takes legwork, but the more you live in it, the more you comfortable you will become with it. And each year it will get easier. Each year you'll know more words. You'll know more about the language than you did the year before. And it's okay to learn with your students. I learn with my students a lot, even with little ones. I'm still learning. Every year I learn more and more. This year we're doing a theme and for transportation, and we made a plain dramatic play center. So, okay, we got to learn all the vocabulary words for all the parts of the plane and the airport. So have fun with it. It doesn't, you know, learn with your students. It's okay for them to see you learn because it shows them that learning language is possible and they're not the only ones learning it.
I also want to talk about your role as a mother passing on their heritage language and culture. So you have two beautiful children. And what has that journey been like for you to think about what it's like to ensure that they are connected into their language and their culture?
Connecting them to their culture is a lot easier than connecting them to their language, I feel, because, you know, you can listen to music and the foods and, you know, do traditions at home and you're not necessarily having to do them in Spanish. When I had my first daughter, you know, I bought into the narrative of we can't be a bilingual home because my husband doesn't speak Spanish. You know, he speaks English only. So we're going to speak English. You know, we can't be a bilingual home because we don't both speak Spanish. And I'm regretting that now. And she's taking the route we took of learning Spanish through school. But I'm trying to speak Spanish more with them and trying to extend what I say to them in Spanish besides the basic commands that, you know, we learned growing up and what I used with them when they were little. My son is not there yet because the same thing, I bought into the narrative where we can't be a bilingual classroom and bilingual homes.
It's clear that she's a teacher. She spends a lot of time in the classroom, y'all.
And so he's at the point now where I don't need to learn Spanish. Like I don't need to do that. So he's not there yet. And so I do feel a little regret about not speaking to them in Spanish. Like, I wish I had the fortitude you have with your babies to just be like, okay, we're going to do Spanish and this is what we're going to do and we're going to make it work. Like, that was never, like, that never popped into my head that I could make this work. So I'm trying to make up time and trying to get them into it now instead of having them wait until they're adults trying to learn it. Because yeah, we can take it in school and we can take it in class, but I don't feel like that's as effective. Like, how many people took high school Spanish and then came out speaking Spanish, right? Like, that it gave you a base knowledge and it's in there somewhere, but it doesn't really get used. So I'm trying to make a conscious effort of, okay, you can say these things in Spanish to them, even though they may not respond back to you, but you can start it now.
Yeah.
It's not too late.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really important to hear, because a lot of families have their own journey of what they think is possible or what they hope for their kids. And sometimes, you know, if they find that their kids are 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 16, that they think that it might be too late, but you can still plant seeds. You can still create an environment that helps make connection to their heritage language stronger, even if they're not speaking it, that they feel connected to the language, because we all know that like motivation is the key to learning, right? Mm-hmm. So if there's no motivation to learn the language, then it's you're out of luck. It's not going to happen. Yeah. So if you can create meaningful relationships and connections to the language, which I think you're doing with culture. And I think it's also really great that they have two cousins that that speak Spanish like stronger than their English. And so I see your kids using the Spanish that they have to be able to communicate with my little ones. And so there's all these kind of like authentic moments, like you reflected in your own journey of like how the authentic moments and relationships helped you in developing your language. It, similarly for our kids, thinking about how we can create that environment as well.
Having their cousins speak Spanish was really nice. Now that they know more English, it's kind of, the kids are like, oh, we can talk to each other.
I know. They're like, we are their English teachers. We're teaching them English. So that's good for my kids. They get practice with their English. But it was nice at around age 2 or 3 when Anton was like, I don't know what you're saying to me in English. So we had to try with some Spanish.
Yeah. So then that really forced Matthew to be like, oh man, I got to find that. What do we say? What do we say? How do I say that? But yeah, so I want them to be connected to it. We are actually leaving for Mexico tomorrow for their first time. And I'm really excited, because just for them to see like, okay, this is where our people are from. This is who we are, you know, deep down inside. This is who we are. So mm-hmm. I'm really excited for them to go and see it.
Yeah, I'm excited for y'all too. Well, thank you so much. We don't want to keep you too long from packing for your wonderful trip to Mexico. Thank you for hopping on with us. We'd love to end our episodes with hearing from our guest something that is bringing them joy these days. So what is bringing you joy these days?
Right now is, like I said, we're getting ready to go we're taking the kids to Mexico. And that was our Christmas gift, to take that trip. And so I'm just very happy and grateful to be able to give them that experience and give them the chance to hear Spanish outside of just me usually yelling at them in Spanish, to be honest. That's when it comes out the most. I just, for them to hear Spanish outside of me and to see a whole other people and culture and society that they are a part of. So I'm really excited.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much, Josie, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@thelanguageproject.co. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma. Talking to Grandma is owned by the Language Preservation Project. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara, and I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.